Hey guys, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of On the Beat. Have you rated or reviewed us yet? If not, why? The best way for us to grow is by sharing us with your friends and rating and reviewing us wherever you get your podcasts. Spotify has a new rating feature right on our podcast front page. It is super easy, and the more 5-star ratings and reviews we get, the better it is for us to grow. If you screenshot and DM us your review, we'll share the most flattering ones on an upcoming episode. Thank you so much for listening, and your support is marvelous and appreciated. Well, hello there. Welcome to On the Beat, the podcast that uncovers full frontal male nudity in cinema. My name is Laura, and I am joined ever so graciously by my co-host Ryan.
Hello.
Ryan.
Imagine that, fellas, like hearing that every so often.
Wow.
When you're just sitting somewhere in the house, all you
Ryan.
Hear is, Ryan, can you come out with Ryan?
Well, Ryan, I'm ready to talk about the 2021 comedy drama film Red Rocket.
Yeah, we thought we'd just jump on the horse.
Yeah,
and
jump on that rocket.
Jump on the cock and just fucking get this done. I didn't want to cover this film. I didn't want to cover it so quickly.
I was trying to force you into doing it for weeks, and then all of a sudden today you're like, "Let's do Red Rocket."
We saw it yesterday. And I was thinking more about it, and I was like, "Well." If anything, covering it now gives it a decent amount of exposure. Not to say that like our audience, like we'd have any sort of marked benefit to making people go to see this film. Because if you're going to go and see it, you would have seen it when it came out like a couple of weeks ago.
Well, potentially, but we didn't get to see it and we saw it yesterday. So
no. Well, again, Omicron or Deltacron or whatever transformer you want to call it at this point, kind of. Kind of like ever kind of bearing down on us every single day. So, yeah, for the most part, we've not really been going to the cinema that much. We have missed some certain things, like Nightmare Alley is also another one that probably bears our attention as well.
Indeed. Bears.
Yes.
Well, tell me about the director, Sean Baker.
Okay, so here's my admission for this. This is the first Sean Baker movie I've seen. But I know of plenty of his stuff. Well, his stuff's available, and you've been trying to force Florida Project on me for a while.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's a good movie, and I'm like, the minute something like that starts to happen, I'm just like, no, I'm not going to watch it.
You want to jump on the trendy bandwagon?
No. Well, when even just one person has a positive opinion on something, I'm just kind of like, no. No, and I just wait until it goes out of style, and then I watch it like 20 years later.
Well, unfortunately, you missed that because it's back in style.
What's back in style?
Florida Project, Sean Baker.
Oh, right.
Back on top, baby.
I know. Well, yeah, I didn't just forget who we're referencing today. So, Sean Baker.
And I told you this yesterday, I thought Sean Baker was a woman.
Yeah, like Sean Young.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly like Sean Young. Until yesterday, when I looked up an interview and it said he, and I'm like, oh no, I thought Sean Baker was a woman, just based on the themes of his films, for whatever reason.
Yeah, I guess like, well,
maybe he has a feminine touch.
Here's the thing, and I think like this is indicative of his work in general, from like what I can understand from watching Red Rocket and from what I've read and stuff to research.
Yeah,
you know, this episode, so to speak, is that he seems to has a very balanced and very, very good observational eye for human behavior.
Right.
So no one ever really kind of seems to exaggerate. Everyone feels very grounded in a reality. And for the most part,
absolutely.
Yeah. Truth is relatively stranger than fiction. We already know this. So
yeah.
He's very much focusing on oddities for the most part. And I'm going to rip this straight from the wiki.
And it says, wild.
Yeah. Oh, dear. So he's established a reputation for portraying underrepresented and marginalized subcultures and outcasts.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you can see that from all the films that he's done so far, where, you know, you have people who have worked in the sex trade and and how he represents those groups in such a way that's very sensitive and interesting.
Never seems at any point he's exploiting anybody.
No.
And also, he's certainly not making a joke out of anybody. Because certainly these are people who are effectively, like, kind of on the... They're skirting on the law and they're making their way. They're waking their way in the world any which way.
But everyone's scraping by and just trying to survive.
Yes. So that's very much what I'm seeing in Red Rocket as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know. I'm in the midst of, like, you know, making stuff and making things in Florida and in the United States. His stuff kind of interests me quite a lot. So let's just cover him as a filmmaker. So he's listed as a director, cinematographer, producer, screenwriter, and editor. So pretty much I'm from the catalog of the work that I have down here, which is about, you know, 8 films, not including Red Rocket. He's played pretty much the main roles in production for most of these films.
You know that well, you know, when you're trying to get things done, you got to do it yourself. He's also has a reputation for doing things on a very low budget.
Yeah.
You know, on a shoestring budget and just trying to put everything together on his own.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. And I think it...
You can connect with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Big time. when you have no money, you have no money to hire people and you have to take on the brunt of the work yourself. That's just... The proof is in the pudding, so to speak. But I don't think it affects his work. I think it benefits his work.
Yeah.
He's kind of... wouldn't compare him to like an Alexander Payne or anything like that, but he's very much his films are all character driven, basis of very good performances. That's where all the drama and the comedy come from.
Yeah,
it's just from the human interactions. So it's a fresh thing, certainly in light of the fact that we are a superhero dominated industry at the moment. You know,
I love it though. I'm not mad about it.
Yeah,
I like everything.
Yeah,
you know, people can talk about. How, I mean, and you were bringing this up as well, how people are saying that Marvel is kind of ruining cinema, but hey, give me some Spider-Man No Way Home, give me some Red Rocket, you know, we can have a balance out there. It's not like it's taking over cinema.
Well, I guess like my main thing,
we were able to go, you know, and you said this too, I'm just copying everything you said, like we were able to go watch this in a movie theater, we were able to go see it in the cinema.
Yeah, we saw it in a multiplex, a place that had a poster up for it and things, which had, you know, had the same amount of films in there. I mean, Scream 5's come out today, I think.
Yeah.
And that'll be playing on the hour every half hour on every single screen, probably for the next 2 weeks.
It'll be like half Scream and then half Spider-Man.
Yeah. So, I mean, the audience speaks with its wallet, you know? Like, if people didn't go and see that stuff and the stuff makes tons and tons of money, and obviously, you know, you pump a lot into marketing and things like that, so you can kind of say, well, you know, if some of these other films aren't able to put as much money into marketing, they're just not getting out there enough. I kind of feel like that whole idea, that argument's a little bit bullshit. It's like, if people don't want to see it, they won't go and see it.
Right. Oh, did you hear, get back to Sean Baker and tell me, I mean, we already talked over some of his films, but I want to tell you the synopsis of this movie.
Okay, so, big deep breath, let's go do this. So, 2000, he makes a film called Four Letter Words. In 2004, he makes Takeout. Here's a more notable one, Prince of Broadway in 2008. Starlet 2012, Tangerine in 2015. Now, I heard about Tangerine way before the film came out, because Sean Baker also shot it, but it's shot on 3/5S iPhones.
Yeah. I remember seeing that in the theater. I went and saw it at the Enzian Theater here in Central Florida, and I did not know what it was, but I'll pretty much go see any movie. So,
yeah.
Oh, you want to go see this Tangerine? I'm like, sure. I don't know what this was.
Yeah.
It was real good.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real good film.
And anybody who's working in the industry, you've definitely shot a commercial or two on an iPhone. I mean, they're even color matching iPhones to Arri Alexas now, which is insane.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. No, I think that's a very interesting thing. And I mean, it very much highlights the fact that, like, you don't need the best technology to create your vision for your film at all. You know?
And it really kind of gives it a look and a feel that his films are, I don't know if they're going for, but you know, yeah, you're gritty, kind of in your face, like you're in the moment, you're walking with these people, you're moving with these people, and especially in Tangerine.
Yeah.
You know, so I didn't know about the iPhone thing, I don't think, until after. And no. I was like, oh, I didn't know.
Hey, look,
looks,
I mean,
good.
It basically means that no one out there has an excuse to why they can't do their own. So it's as simple as that.
Boom. Florida Project?
No, Snowbird in 2016, oh, then Florida Project, okay, in 2017.
Took me ages to see that. We were trying to find a theater that was playing that, I remember, and going, I think we were the only people in the cinema.
Yeah.
But it had been out for like ages.
Mm-hmm.
That one's also very good.
Yeah, it's got Willem Dafoe in it. I've not seen it yet.
I'm a big fan of Florida things.
Of course you are. You are from Florida.
I am. So it's really good.
There's a short in 2021. I'll try my best to pronounce it. KTFW21. No idea what it is. And then we have Red Rocket the same year, obviously in 2021, that was released a couple of weeks ago.
The synopsis for this, straight from Letterboxd: finding himself down and out in Los Angeles, ex-porn star Mikey Saber decides to crawl back to his hometown of Texas City, Texas, where his estranged wife and mother-in-law are living. Just as his dysfunctional family seems to be making things work, Mikey meets a young woman named Strawberry working the cash register at a local donut shop. That's all that it says.
Yeah.
Which is fine, mm-hmm, you know, but on a whole, I think it's a man who's down and out, who's trying to get, you know, out of the hole. And yeah.
Thing is,
he's also a piece of shit.
Yeah, I guess, like, I was concerned with, you know, potentially spoiling this movie for people, because it's getting a lot of praise, it's getting a lot of hype. And I will say this, like, straight off the bat, don't think this film is excellent, but I don't think we're spoiling anything either by talking about it at great length.
Well, if you are absolutely desperate to see this film and you haven't seen it yet, we might spoil something. So just spoiler alert, there yeah, you go, because we did just watch it. And so whatever,
yeah,
you know, stop now if you don't want to hear anything about this movie. But then why did you turn it on?
Yeah, exactly. Why did you switch this on?
Yeah, what the hell?
Well, it's because they love
Let's
us.
Just keep
it's because we need them. No,
Let's
we
just
need them.
Stay with us.
Yeah.
Stay so with us. I'll try not to spoil anything too bad, but it's, you know, it's a character study. It's not like you're gonna spoil it. It's not like Spider-Man spoilers.
No, it's not like Wild Thing spoilers. So
oh
you know,
love Wild Things.
Yeah. So I guess like what you're saying, it's kind of basically like what we're seeing is that Mikey, what's his real second name? Because it's not Saber, obviously.
Davies.
Originally a Texas boy, because there's a lot of stuff in there where he's like, because he was in California doing porn films and stuff, he had to get rid of his drawl because he sounded like a hick.
So
much.
Condescending as well. Yeah. He's talking to these people who,
Deep
you know,
Texas. Yeah.
Have grown up and lived there their whole lives. And that happens across the world.
Yeah.
You know, it happens everywhere where you just, that's where you live. That's where your family's lived for years. That's where you're going to continue to live and you grow up and potentially have families. And
yeah,
that's just where you are.
Yeah.
And he just is incredibly condescending to these people who he's asking for favors on a constant basis because he thinks that he's more important than he is.
Yeah.
And, oh, what happened to your accent? Oh, well, people were making fun of me, said I sounded like a dumb hick, so I lost the accent.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Talking to these people who have the accent.
Yes, yes.
Such a dick.
Yeah, no. The thing is, because of his, and I guess, like, I wouldn't call him, like, an anti-hero, because I don't think it actually goes that far, but, I mean, he's a fuck-up. Like, that's the thing. He's mainly a fuck-up.
He's an anti-hero in the way that we're following him, and he's, like, our, you know, the man we're following throughout the story.
Yeah.
He's just terrible.
Yeah. So, I mean,
he's very funny.
Yeah, he's very funny.
He's very funny. He's
obviously
just
a kind
awful
of
person.
Yeah. He's very funny. He's kind of very he's obviously got the street smarts. He knows what he's been doing, but he's obviously not done very well. He's kind of poorly educated. He's one of those.
If he would keep his mouth shut,
yes,
he would get into less trouble.
But he does have the gift of the gab. I will say that.
So many times where I was rolling my eyes, I'm just like, shut up, dude.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's the thing is, like, his gift is good enough for a 17-year-old to to effectively coerce her into having a relationship with him. I don't know, what's the legal age in Texas?
17.
Oofed.
The legal age of consent in Texas is 17. Fuck. And I didn't even get to say their names, but obviously we have Simon Rex, who plays Mikey. Bree Elrod, who plays Lexi, who is his estranged ex-wife.
No, they're still married.
Oh, yeah.
They've never been divorced. Yeah.
Oh, my God, right. Uh-huh. Estranged wife.
Yes.
Susanna's son plays Strawberry.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out, I was wondering how old Strawberry was, you know, the actor.
Yeah.
Susanna. She's 26.
Okay.
She looks like a little baby.
She does, but I mean, she's been cast accordingly. So that's good.
That is good.
That is good. So it's still kind of gross. Certainly, it's like, gross. Yeah, certainly when that kind of starts to come into play, because like the minute he meets her at the donut hole and the donut hole becomes a primary location for most of the movie, the minute that starts to happen, he sees her and he starts getting things start to fucking click in his head. You're like, bro, like, please don't.
I want to say this, and it's, you know, it's whatever, spoilers, but when he sees her at the donut shop and he's looking in her eyes and it's flashing back and forth between him and her,
yes,
I'm like, is that his daughter? I thought, I'm like, is that, that's the first thing I thought, was like, is this his daughter from you know, because he likes to have sex a lot, so I don't know. But then it got really weird for me for a while before I realized, oh no, that's not, he just wants to have sex with her. Okay.
I don't share that with you. I feel like just something that immediately was popped into your head.
Maybe that's his kid. He goes, oh, she looks really familiar.
Right.
But he didn't say that. That's what I thought.
I mean, to the credit of, like, is it Chris, who's the other writer? Chris Doug?
Oh my gosh. I didn't write it down.
What? You didn't write a fucking thing down?
No.
Did I write it down?
I wrote down fun facts.
Hold on. 2 seconds. I wrote it down. It was...
Thanks for being prepared.
Yeah, Chris Berko. Or Bearcock. I'm not too sure.
Bearcock?
Bearcock.
Nice.
Chris Bearcock. Or Chris Berko. Let's just say it's Chris Bergo. Or Chris Bergo? Chris Bergo.
Oh my God, Ryan.
Look, I'm trying my best here. Like, I'm trying to read it. Anyway, like,
it doesn't matter. But Chris...
Yeah, Chris and Sean, who wrote the movie.
Correct.
They write a lot of stuff together anyway.
Dream team.
Yeah, I think they've written all of Sean Baker's films together. And they're their films, like, together as a partnership. They're their films.
Well, that's nice.
No, sometimes the simplest approach is the easiest approach. It's no point overcomplicating things by, like, here's his daughter that just kind of showed up for no reason.
I honestly didn't know what the story was about when we went in.
Yeah.
I just knew that a lot of people were coming up to us and sending us messages. Friends of ours are going,
yeah,
you have to see this movie, there's a dick in it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, that had been coming out before anyone had even seen the movie.
Yeah, of course.
There is full frontal male nudity in this film.
Yes, yes. And certainly we'll go into more detail when we get to those scenes, because there's two moments in this movie.
We didn't know how to do this because we went into the movie and we weren't going to cover it. But I was like, I need to write down the timestamps. But
yeah,
what I was going to do was go in and I was going to set a timer for when the film started. And then I can remember at what timestamp it is. And then it was just all a mess. I totally forgot.
We're usually quite used to sitting in our living room and, like, studying and being able to pause the film and then kind of go something, come back, and then... and then have notes and stuff in front of us. Here, we're kind of just doing everything retroactively. And I kind of feel like we did that for the Wee Beats, for, like, Suicide Squad and things. But even then, Suicide Squad...
Yeah, it was on HBO Max.
You can watch that on HBO Max. So we were able to actually retroactively kind of go back and look at it all and see what kind of details we might have missed and all that sort of thing. But in this case, it's like, yeah, we have to make do with our terrible fucking memories.
Oof.
Which are... awful.
So bad.
Absolutely awful. And mine's really bad, but yours is worse.
Oh, I don't remember anything.
Oh, it's awful. Tenable. So, yeah, we're aging so fast.
So rapidly.
Yeah. Degenerative fucking brain worms or whatever the fuck's going on up there. I have no idea.
It's like we're in the movie Old that I haven't seen yet.
No, I don't think there's a dick in that, and I don't care. But we're kind of like, well... what we've described in the synopsis is a pretty much, we're looking at Mike's day-to-day musings from the minute he plants himself back at his wife's house basically coercing her to keep him there so he has somewhere to stay because he's fucking homeless and he has no money.
Correct.
He spent the last of his dime getting a bus from California to Texas. And then it's basically how he's wheeling and dealing his way back into these people's lives who he's left behind.
Oh, for, yeah. Like,
say, 20-something years.
17 years.
Yeah, to try and make a quick buck, pretty much.
Yeah, he wants to get back on top. And it is startling how he treats these people.
Yes. But yes.
It's really cool because parts of the movie might come back to me, yeah. But I think the production, and I have a lot of fun tidbits.
Yes.
About this. So I think Sean Baker does this a lot where the cast will just be human beings that he found.
Yes.
And maybe he'll get them to audition, but he'll find people like, oh, I like your look. Would you like to be in my film? Oh, yeah. I like your look. He did the same thing for Susanna Sun. He saw her outside of the Arclight Cinema in Hollywood. Okay. And I think it was for the premiere of that Gus Van Sant movie, Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot.
Yeah, the Joaquin Phoenix disabled man film.
Haven't seen it yet.
No, it's on Amazon. It's an Amazon movie. We can watch it. We can watch it whenever.
Okay. Put it on the list.
Yeah.
But I guess...
The disabled man movie.
Oh, dear. Well, he said that he liked how she looked, and I think it was before he made Florida Project.
Okay.
They exchanged emails, and he didn't contact her for almost 3 years after that.
Okay.
And she was like, oh, no, it's never going to happen. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, he contacted her about being Strawberry.
Okay.
So... And a few of the other people were just working at the restaurant, like the guy who plays Lonnie,
yeah,
was just a server at a restaurant in Texas.
Okay. Goes,
oh, great. The same thing with the donut hole. They were just driving around Texas, kind of doing like location scouting, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And originally they wanted Strawberry to be working at a food truck outside of the plant, whatever, the refinery.
It's the refinery, yeah.
And then they drove by the actual like donut hole location, and then they were like, "This is amazing!
Yes.
This is perfect. The colors, everything."
Yeah, it's a really beautiful looking location. Certainly, like it's very photogenic.
Yeah,
And it has that straight out of the 1950s.
Yeah, and they were able to film there because they had to keep it open as the business,
yeah,
as the donut shop in the morning, and then they used it in like the afternoon and the evening.
So. Kind of just to be a bit more roundabout with it, because we can go from scene to scene. I mean, that's fine. But what you're kind of seeing is like the guy's wheeling and dealing. So yeah, we're following Mikey. He's like trying to get a job for the fact that like he is a porn star. Or he was a porn star. He's not really able to acquire some of the jobs that are in the area, which is mostly service jobs.
He has a 17-year gap in his resume, and everyone wants to know why.
Yes,
and he eventually I feel like he's not holding back too hard the fact that he was an adult film actor.
The thing that you'll realize about Mikey and Mikey's character is that he wears his reputation and the things that he's done very much on his sleeve, to the point where, like, you know, he talks about like the AVN awards that he's had and stuff like that. And he's like, I won Best Oral. And it's like, but you're there with like 7 other guys.
You all share the trophy.
Yeah, you all share the trophy. And it's like, why would it go to you specifically? Because, you know, the girl's doing all the work, all this sort of stuff. Like, it'd be very admirable if he was like a brain surgeon. You know what I mean? And he wore like all of this stuff on his sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that like his profession, right? He's just very good at doing something that's a very natural and innate part of just like a human being.
Correct.
And their survival instinct. It means nothing.
I mean, he's basically just out to get his.
Yeah, yeah.
And fuck everybody else.
I mean, yeah, to be fair, quite literally, to be fair. thing is, like, there comes a point near the end of the film where they figure out, like, how long he's been there for. And it feels like he's been there for months. It's been the span of, like, 4 weeks.
Yeah. Also, this movie is too long.
Yes.
Which might be my only gripe with this film, is that it's two hours and 10 minutes long.
Yes, aye, there's a bit too much. And I guess that's why I feel that by the time you find out how long he's been there for in the span of the story...
It's because we've been there also for 4 weeks.
Because we also feel like we've been there for a very, very long time.
I didn't even look up the runtime before we went to the film because I assumed the nature of this movie would be a 90-minute film.
Yeah.
So I wasn't worried. And when we got out of the theater and it was dark, I went, what just happened?
Yes.
Everything is closed that we were going to go do after this movie.
Yeah.
It's too long, but it didn't necessarily feel that way when we were sitting there.
No, it doesn't. To be fair, it doesn't feel, when it's playing out and when the film is good, it's great. In moments where you're like, oh, I feel like I've just seen this 20 minutes before. Because certainly when the film goes from just the, like from the house to him just traveling around on his bike and things like that. And that stuff's really, like, it all looks really, really nice. And it's all kind of happening. And it's a bit oddball for the most part. Like, just this, because he characterizes it as like, it's a shithole town. This is why I fucking left. There's no reason for me to be here. But, like, what we are experiencing is that it does kind of wander a little bit. And I feel like the detriment to kind of films like this, and certainly when you feel like you're... Because, like, Sean Baker's approach to, like, basically collecting all these people to be in his film.
Right.
It's nothing new. Like, this has happened in films and stuff before.
Right.
But what I feel like, and what I feel like it does, is it just allowed to breathe maybe a little bit too much. There's only so much social realism, I feel like, I could take from the film itself until I was like, okay, come on, let's get this moving.
Okay, yeah, I don't think that that's how I had looked at it. I think it just got a little bit redundant at certain parts, but not necessarily with the actors, and not necessarily because that they are, you know, they're not typically actors.
No.
I think it was just his goal in the film was to get Strawberry to, he what did she call him? A suitcase?
Pimp,
but it was a homeless suitcase pimp.
Yeah,
that's what she called him. That's what Lexi called him, because he is trying to gain and garner fame and fortune off of the back of another human being, which is Strawberry. Mm-hmm. He's trying to get Strawberry back to LA so he can be her suitcase pimp.
Yeah,
and
because like what
and
you're
get
kinda...
her into porn.
Yeah,
and it just gets a little bit redundant every single day at the donut shop, and then trying to get her and, you know,
well, that's what
grooming her into.
That's what I mean when I talk about the realist aspects. Because, like, if you want to, we want to take, like, a day-by-day basis, like, the monotony of everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
The beautiful thing about film, and Godard made this point quite clear, and certainly with the French New Wave and all that sort of thing, you don't have to see someone going from point A to point B in order to get to C. All you can do is you can start from A and just cut straight to C. You don't have to bother with all this preamble. Don't need any of this stuff in the middle.
Well, then how are we going to get all those nice bicycle shots?
I feel like we get a lot of that already, you know? It's not like Licorice Pizza, where they just won't stop running.
Yeah.
You know, like I prefer Red Rocket to Licorice Pizza. Plus, I mean, at least they know what the age of consent is in Red Rocket.
Yeah, so, right.
Yeah.
Oh, but my God, that's funny.
Yeah, but the main thing is, like, it's maybe just a little bit bloated, and it just doesn't get to the point quick enough. But that's not to say that what we are subjected to, certainly in these great little moments that are kind of spread out maybe a little bit too thinly.
I think that Simon Rex was such a cool choice and such an interesting actor to have in this role, and I don't know, I just think it worked out so well. I don't think this would have worked without him in it.
It seems relatively serendipitous because of the nature of what the story of Red Rocket is. It's kind of reflective of some sort of level.
Oh yeah, it is reflective of his career. I remember Simon Rex from being on MTV, because he was a VJ, like a video jockey on MTV when I was younger, so in 1995. That's, you know, I was 10 years old. I vividly remember all of the VJs on MTV. It was a huge deal back then, right?
VJs.
VJs. I know it sounds Gross. Well, interesting, because he actually started his career in Hollywood by doing solo masturbation porn.
Wow. Okay.
Simon Rex. Back in 94.
Okay.
So he had answered an ad in a newspaper, ended up going and doing solo masturbation pornography, and then he ended up getting picked up by a model, like a modeling talent.
Okay.
Agent.
Mm-hmm.
And then he ended up doing modeling for like Versace and Calvin Klein and Tommy Hilfiger.
Okay.
And then he auditioned and got the job the next year in 1995 as a VJ.
All right.
Then from there, you know, he had a lot of fame. Like, I remember him being super famous.
Okay.
Doing Spring Breaks and all that type of thing on MTV. And
oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, like the Arrested Development.
A la Pauly Shore.
Oh, like those Arrested Development videos. Yeah.
Oh, what were they called?
Like Girls with Dignity or whatever.
Oh, Girls with Low Self-Esteem.
Yeah.
Well, no, because they would have like big outdoor concerts in like
Pensacola
or Daytona or whatever.
Right, okay.
Do you remember those old Pauly Shore videos I used to show you?
Yeah, but you also showed me a fucking rap video with this dude in it.
Yeah, after
he
stopped doing his VJ thing at MTV, he became a rapper called Dirt Nasty.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And I guess it's like a comedy rap.
I hope so.
Because we watched that video today.
Yeah,
I don't remember what it was called. It was like
shocking.
The 80s. That was like the name of the song.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
But yeah, he did a lot of the scary movie films. You know, a lot of those parody movies.
Yeah, I noticed that.
But it was like Scary Movie like 3, 4, 5 when people stopped watching those films.
Yeah, well, I mean, later on you've got Charlie Sheen and Lindsay Lohan obviously in them, and it's like, yeah, they look like straight death.
I love Lindsay Lohan.
I mean, that's fine, but...
Well, Sean Baker ended up calling Simon Rex like straight out of the blue.
Okay.
And asked him to do an audition. And he's like, I think he had like an hour, like less than an hour. He goes, just... I'll give you some of the script, read it, send me back an audition tape.
Okay.
And Simon Rex is like, oh, fuck it, I guess. I've got nothing else going on. It was like hot, middle pandemic, 2020. No one knows what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I guess. He goes, I don't have any other calls coming in. I'm not doing anything else. The world's going to end, you know,
potentially.
COVID. So he's like, yeah, why not just do it?
Yeah.
And he did. And he had 3 days. Sean Baker's like, this is great. This is perfect. Be in Texas in 3 days. And he didn't want to like deal with the quarantine after flying.
Okay.
So he just fucking drove.
Huh.
Straight from LA to Texas to do the film. They had like no time to rehearse. No one had any time to rehearse. And they just had to like jump in.
Yeah.
I mean, this was all the whole filming. You know, they didn't have permits. This wasn't a union job. They just had to just go for it. Simon Rex didn't even tell his agent that he was doing it.
Okay.
Until after.
Wow. Okay. This is all very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that sort of thing. To be honest, I'm never going to be big league. I think that's the thing I like about Sean Baker's stuff just in general is like, it's never huge. It's like you give this guy a bunch of money. I don't know how interesting it would be afterwards.
The most money that they had to spend, I think, was on NSYNC's Bye Bye Bye.
Yeah. They had to license out that song.
They had to get permission from everyone in the group to use the song in this film.
Wow.
And it wasn't until after they'd finished that they got permission.
Huh.
And then the studio, I think it was, or the production company, whoever it was, decided like, okay, this song is actually perfect for the movie. And then, and then gave them the money.
Yeah.
Because it was too expensive.
Is it as perfect for the movie as Hit the Road Jack at the end of The House That Jack Built? If anyone's not seen that movie, then...
I'm going to be honest. The Hit the Road Jack in The House That Jack Built is spot on perfection.
Yeah. Well done, Lars.
I don't know. You have an idea, you go out there and you make it. I think it's fabulous.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone kind of came on to this film knowing they weren't going to make any money.
No, the more you kind of
say about it, like, you're not getting paid for this, Simon. Just saying. He's like, okay.
They didn't pay Simon Rex?
I think they ended up making money, but right off the bat, I don't think there was any money involved.
Okay.
Or any money. I don't know. I'm sure there was some money.
I think there has to be something.
But
it's like, yeah, because you can't really get away with that. Certainly not in America. You can't get away with being like, we'll look after you on the back end. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
We'll get you. We'll, you know, here's a nice new bike, you know,
a nice new bike,
a speedboat. You know, I did want to kind of talk a little bit about just just kind of how the film is and why I kind of enjoyed it so much. Because, like, when you say things about, like, there's no money here, like, Simon Rex has to travel for fucking 3 days in his own car from LA to Texas. He's pretty much living the story the minute he gets there.
100%.
And then there's that, there's an amazing scene right at the very beginning. You say, like, oh, they didn't have any time to rehearse. It's like the minute he meets Lexi at the opening of the movie, there's a shot at the side of the house where they have a conversation and it's all in a oneer and it's a nice big wide. And they, obviously, he's blocked it out a certain way, and they do like 6 or 7 pages worth of dialogue just talking to each other in this one wide shot. And I was like, okay, I can see where this is going.
With
I like
the added
this.
Benefit of that adorable pit bull.
That motherfucking dog.
5 stars.
Oh my God.
For that pit bull.
See,
more pit bulls in movies. They're so precious.
The film is a bit long, but there are things I quite like it that it does repeat, which is just the shots of this adorable little red-nosed pit bull. It's kind of brown and white, of like rolling in the grass or like. Or
like every time he walks outside the house, he like looks and says hi to the dog, which I love so much.
Well, he's like sitting with the dog, or he's looking, or like there's moment because like there's loads of shots of him like sitting on the porch having a cigarette and stuff like that. And there's some of my favorite bits in the movie where you can see like he's thinking and he's like having his musings and he's kind of like the cogs are turning in his head about like, what he's gonna do next. And then obviously we have these other little beautiful moments where we're like, there's the dog in his bed. It was a he or a she. I'm not too sure. It was a she. Or it's just rolling in the grass, having a good time.
Yeah. There's 2 penis scenes.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember the first one, and I think it's just he walks out of the bedroom naked.
Yeah, so Lexi's mum, Lil, who's also a non-actor as well, pretty much. Lil's obviously going, Lil is a character. I'm just going to point out Lil because Lil's probably, other than Lil and June, June is the daughter of the woman who supplies Mikey with all the weed.
Leandria. To go and sell. Yeah.
Yeah. That whole family with June, Leandra, like, and her 2 sons, like her boys and stuff like that. That whole family, one of my favorite things in the whole film.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Like, their dynamics, very fucking good, very funny. And June obviously doesn't give a fuck. But yeah, Lil's of it, because Lexi's moved in with Lil, and Lexi's obviously got something wrong with her. Let's say be cancer, whatever. She's in pain. She's having pain medication.
Oh, the mother.
Yes.
Okay, right, yeah.
The mother.
Yeah.
And there's that beautiful moment where she gets Mikey in the kitchen and has a little word with him and basically says, is this going to be forever? Because I don't want my daughter going back on the Craigslist and like meeting clients and all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because like, I think this is maybe something we haven't pointed out either, is that Lexi was also in the porn business.
Yeah, they had gone out to California together.
They went out together. They were married. They were doing couples porn and stuff like that. But for the most part, they've been spat out of that industry, right? They're not able to get jobs. They're kind of fucked, pretty much.
Yeah.
And they're the worst for wear.
Yeah, they're great. That mother-daughter combo is really sweet and
solid. Yeah, solid.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what you kind of find out as like the film progresses, like Mikey's walking into a bubble that's been very well formed over the past 17 years where everyone's got Lil's back.
So I'm just trying to figure out and remember these scenes. The first one, I think it's about 47 minutes in,
yes,
where he decides that he wants to have sex with Lexi again, and she agrees, right?
Yeah, so
it's kind of weird.
Well,
but
he's a scumbag, so he kind of just weasels his way, like he charms his way back into her life.
Yeah.
And these are quite voracious individuals.
Yes.
So for the most part, like if there's sex on the table, they're probably going to have a 3-course meal. So.
Oh my God.
So what kind of ends up happening is like they start having sex again.
Yeah.
And then he moves from the couch to her, to Lexi's
bedroom.
Yeah.
He's using it as a, you know, trying to get that upward mobility from the couch to the bed.
Pretty much.
And using her vagina as his key.
That's his key.
But he walks out of the bedroom and Lil, the mother-in-law, sitting on the couch, and he just walks out.
Yeah, lapse of realization. He just basically laps out, and he's got this fucking thing like slapping against his thigh.
Yeah, I don't normally describe the penis, but Simon Rex is a gigantic wiener.
There's a lot there, and to the point where like it's so big. At the end of the movie, I was not convinced it was real.
I know, I had to do research.
Yeah.
And as far as I can tell, that's a real penis.
There's nothing saying it's not.
Correct.
So we kind of have to take it under the assumption that it is.
Yeah, it is. It'd be frightening. Yeah.
Let's put it this way. It's so big that it makes him run awkwardly.
We don't need to maybe go into the specifics about the end and why he's running down the street naked.
No.
But he is running down the street.
There's a level of desperation that happens that involves him having to run down a late night road completely in the nutty.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's funny because you're right, he is running awkwardly, but that's because they were in a not so great neighborhood in the middle of the night.
Okay.
Very, very gravelly street with just really...
It's a broken glass.
Probably. You know? And you remember they don't have any permits. They don't have permissions. Okay. There was one night where they were filming this, and the cops came by. And obviously the cops are used to more dangerous things and crimes occurring in this area.
Okay.
But then they just have this little film crew out there.
Mm.
And they're like, what are you guys doing out here?
Yeah.
They go, oh, we're filming a movie. And they go, oh, right. We knew you guys were here.
Mm.
Just have a good time.
Yeah.
And Simon Rex had to like jump into a bush and like put a robe on. And like climb into a van because he's totally naked.
Yeah.
And he ended up, because of the street was so gravelly, he had to put duct tape on the bottom of his feet, which is why he's running so funny.
Okay. It kind of like it.
But it works.
Yeah. Because the way he's running, and again, like it's completely played for laughs. Like this whole sequence played for laughs. Like it got a big laugh out of the five people, including us who were in the screening at the time.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's, you know, the way it's shot and stuff like that. Because it cuts to the NSYNC track, pretty much. Because there's a point where, like, it's, like, on his face and he's running. And then it tilts down very sharply and then we see his cock. So pretty much they're playing into the fact that he's completely naked. Like, there's no... This is kind of sideways levels of, like, exposure that we're seeing here. Very similar to it.
Oh, there's a close-up.
Like, played his face, like, you're going to fucking see everything. Like, this is just the way it's going to be.
Oh, yeah.
But but I think the reason I was like, oh, it looks awkward is that it's like he's...
It's like power walking.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I'm not going to say like... It's
like a little jog.
Yeah, but like reverse Buffalo Bill in it from like Silence of the Lambs, where he like tucks it in.
Right.
Like, would you fuck me? You know, it's like, you know, he's tucking it in there.
I have no idea what you're describing.
Well, you know that bit in Silence of the Lambs?
No.
Right.
I know that part. Yeah. I'm just saying, I don't know what you mean about him, like, backwards tucking something.
Well, like, it's like he forgot to tuck it in, but he's still doing the stance with his legs.
Okay.
You know
what
I mean?
So he's, like, squeezing his butt.
Yeah, he's, like, squeezing his ass.
Okay.
Like, squeezing his cheeks together. Pretty much.
So Sean Baker and Simon Rex had to have a conversation about that scene. And he's, you know, saying, well, there's the scene, you're going to have to run down the street naked. He goes, but don't worry, I'm only going to use like 7 seconds of it. But, you know, we are going to have to film it.
Yeah.
Obviously. And Simon Rex just said, well, fuck it. It's not like I have a career that I'm going to fuck up.
Fuck. That's some plain-faced honesty right there.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, he said in several interviews that the phone hasn't really been ringing like it used to. And so he might as well take this job. And it was like an amazing career move for him. So.
Yeah. No, I think it's. Yeah. I mean, these roles only come up once in a lifetime, to be fair.
Yeah. And he usually gives them to people that work at restaurants.
Unless
you're Willem Dafoe.
Yeah. Well, Willem Dafoe has a career.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. He definitely has a career.
Yes,
he was in that Spider-Man movie. Did you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Love him.
Yeah.
Ryan, would you recommend this movie?
Yeah.
I would recommend this movie. I kind of thought I would like it more than I did. And maybe it's just going to be like a slow burn in my brain and I'm going to think about it more and I'm going to like it more.
Let's put it this way. I think the things I end up coming out of seeing that I feel lukewarm on, I watch them again and I end up loving.
Well, we will buy this movie.
yeah, I really enjoyed it. You know? I really enjoyed it. But obviously, I mean, I have certain misgivings about it that I feel like I've already shared.
For sure.
You know?
But yeah, I would recommend it. I liked it. I thought it was funny. I thought it was very uncomfortable. And I like when things make me uncomfortable because then I think the filmmaker's doing a great job. You know? Make me feel stuff.
Yeah, the film does a really good job of creating this world, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it does a very good job of making it feel very real.
I think that's just his whole thing, you know? Yeah. They went to Texas, they used real locations, they didn't build mm-hmm. anything, they rented that house.
Yeah.
You know, that's a house that people live in.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the scenery, yeah. you know? A lot of those, like, smokestacks and stuff.
Yeah, industry.
Yeah.
These landscapes for, like, say, social realist films. That's like, I talk about, like, Out of the Furnace. Like, that Scott Cooper movie. The Deer Hunter, I would say, is also another one.
Okay.
You know, it's like small town living and the only industry that you can get. You're either a fucking coal miner
Definitely.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, I'm interested in potentially revisiting this film later on when we get to have it on home video.
Yeah, I feel like this episode's very much a spur of the moment. Here we are. We need to talk about this movie. But I feel like it does require maybe further analysis on another watch.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like if we feel like we have more to say, I feel like we'd come out with a part two for Red Rocket.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, yeah, this film is brave and brazen and it doesn't give a fuck. Like, I really enjoy the fact that this film just kind of goes balls out.
Yeah.
Pardon the pun, you know. Like, it just kind of goes for it. And on the basis of, like, what you've described to me, like, its budget and things like that. Because I still think it's shot on film. I'm not too sure if it is.
Right.
So, I mean, there's definitely some money behind it because
The full frontal makes sense. I think the way that they did it makes sense. I mean, you've got a guy
who's... I will say, here's the thing. Shooting on film gives the film a beautiful texture about it.
Mm.
Like, it's something that you just wouldn't be able to capture on digital as well, I feel like.
Interesting.
So it just, yeah, it has a texture, has a look and a feel about it that I feel like shooting on film definitely lends to its benefit, so.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, everything in this movie makes sense, and...
Yeah.
I like the full frontal stuff because it would be really disappointing to have a movie like this and have his profession be such and not see his wiener.
Yeah.
It's like that show Hung with Thomas Jane.
I've never seen any of it. Is it?
Never sees penis. Californication. He's a sex addict. Never sees penis.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, it's for TV, though. It's not...
As it was on Showtime.
Okay, well.
I'll go first. Visibility and context. 5. 5 stars.
Yeah, I gave it 5 stars as well.
And, I mean, obviously, it works for the film. It makes sense in the film. It's also very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's seeing a man who has nothing, who is trying to build himself, you know,
yeah.
who had kind of been the king of the mountain, has fallen and is trying to build himself back up.
Well, here's
and
the
then,
thing.
At, you know, at the end, he ends up back where he started. He has nothing.
Yeah.
He's totally naked and he's running through the streets because he's lost everything again.
Yeah.
As he should, you know, and...
Well, he's the king of his own self-proclaimed mountain.
Right.
But that mountain is made out of semen and poop.
It's bullshit, yeah.
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 I think you're spot on. I think in order for us to appreciate and to understand that he's from the porn industry, he has to have a giant, fucking member, like, slapping between his legs. Like, that's just the kind he is. Yeah. Because he has nothing else. Like, there is nothing other than him sporting a dick. And for the most part, whenever he's talking about it, other than to, like, his friend who, like, drives him around to the malls and mm-hmm. stuff like that, no one cares.
No.
No one gives a fuck.
No, absolutely not.
And they're just like, I don't want to hear it. Like, I'm not interested in what you have to say.
They're trying to get him to stop talking.
Yeah, it's like, put your junk away. Like, no one's interested in it whatsoever.
I think I gave it 3.5 stars, which is another reason that I'm interested in revisiting this at some point. I think the half star, I was initially thinking, like, it's definitely going to be 4 stars.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was that extra 40 minutes that the movie maybe doesn't need, you know.
Yeah, there's a point where the minute the donut hole comes on the scene and he takes them out for donuts and we meet Strawberry and stuff like mm-hmm. that is where I feel like it starts to get so much more drawn out than it needs to be.
Yeah.
We're to the point where there is three scenes in the donut hole that are shot almost exactly the same. Wide, slowly tracks in, and those scenes are played out. And you feel like, as much as he's trying to develop the relationship between, obviously, Mikey and Strawberry, truncate it just a little bit, please. It doesn't have to be that long. I would like to revisit it again to figure out if my rating is worthy or not. But it's a 3.5 for me as well.
Okay.
It just needs to, it needs some of that meat, some of the fat taken off of it.
Yeah.
You know, that's we said we weren't going to do it, but we did it.
Yep. You're welcome.
And I feel like we've done something. Don't know if it's fantastic, but we did it.
Yeah, it's here.
It's here. It's here for prosperity. It's also free.
Posterity?
Yep. See, I've not been able to say words all day. There are certainly parts of this podcast that I might go in and just insert the word I meant to say later on.
Like a robot voice?
Probably, you know.
Well, thank you so much for agreeing, or more like, I wanted you to do this movie, then you didn't want to do it, and then you wanted to do it, and I thought, okay, here we are. So thanks for that.
Yeah.
Coming to you from the donut hole, I have been Laura.
Ryan.
And we'll see you next time. Thanks, guys.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, bye, bye.